You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support the podcast on Patreon by joining the It's All Cobblers to Me fan club. Every month, you'll receive access to exclusive bonus content, such as our Meet the Staff series, hear our player interviews before anyone else, and be invited to regular meetups. By joining the fan club, you'll be helping us to continue our sponsorship of NTFC women's player Abby Bruin and enable us to keep the podcast and all our other content going to the high standards you expect. To join the fan club, go to patreon.com/cobblers2me.
Hello everyone, Danny here, and welcome to the It's All Cobblers to Me preview show. We'll be joined this week by Colchester fan Si Collinson in just a little bit to look ahead to Saturday's game. But first, Charles Commons is here. How are you, Charles?
Oh, hello, Daniel. I'm very well. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. Are you looking forward to Saturday's game that kicks off at 2 o'clock?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you mentioned that it kicks off at 2 o'clock, because otherwise I'd have got my flight to France/Germany a bit late.
You don't want that. You don't want to do
want
that.
Don't want that.
We'll mention it a few times. 2 o'clock kickoff. For Neil's sake, more than anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, Neil.
Colchester, come on.
He rocks up at half-time with his hot dog. What's going on?
And his Haribo. Don't forget his Haribo. Yeah.
Why is it? Is it Saints game at 2 o'clock? Is that what's
going
on?
I'm going to say yes.
Yes, let's go
Either
with that.
Is Buddy's still across the road near the BP garage? They're having a big party that kicks off at... 4:30. So,
hosted by Seb Harris.
Yes, absolutely. And other Americans. Neil Kitson will be there. Special
Neil Kitson will be there. Yeah, Joe Biden will be there.
Yeah. I like the way that we've gone from former Cobblers players.
I've got the president
of the United States.
Alexi Lalas, he'll be there, rocking up. Likes a party.
Love it.
We've got no midweek game to be depressed about this week.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we could sit back last night. We had three games in League Two. Bristol Rovers did us a favour by beating Chris Sutton United.
They did. 2-0. Yeah. Good result.
Hartlepool did us a favour by beating Tranmere 1-0.
Yeah, I don't like that result though.
Do you not?
Not a fan of that one.
What's wrong with that?
Mainly because I predicted a 1-0 Tranmere win.
Oh, yes, you did.
on the Patreon pod. And clearly I got that wrong.
He did. And I don't think anyone got the next one right. Exeter 4, Harrogate 3. Bloody Harrogate letting us down.
I've just had a message here. Neil says that's what he predicted.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was. Yeah. I think Harrogate were 3-1 up, weren't they? Okay.
They were definitely 2-0 up. I remember that. And then, maybe it was... I know that Exeter pulled it back to 3-3 in around about the last 10 minutes. And then a 95th minute winner.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Brilliant.
Have a look. Yes, yeah, they were 3-1 down as well, and then they scored three times in the last 20 minutes.
I mean, just
bloody Exeter.
Flipping Exeter. So, I don't like Exeter.
I'm not a fan.
But I'm not. I've decided.
We've had our fun with them, haven't we?
I mean, they're that club, though, aren't they, that seem to do well every year in terms of getting towards the playoffs, but then just can't take it over the line.
You say that now, Charles.
Well, you know, I say
now
that.
Now they've overtaken us in the league.
Well, you know, let's just see what happens. You never know. Have we still got to play them at home? We must do, or something.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
I've lost track of what's going on, but they've overtaken us. They're in third. We've dropped down to fourth ahead of the weekend. Sutton's still in fifth. But we've got two games in hand on Tranmere now, and we're 3 points behind them. We'll be chopping at their heels soon enough.
There you go. You know how I said we still got to play Exeter? We do. It's the last home game of the season.
Oh, yeah, of course it is, yeah.
You should have known that.
Could be a ding-dong, that.
Well, I'm hoping that it will be a walkover like the last time.
I mean, if that's third against fourth and we beat them to go up.
Could you imagine? I've got a very quick question for you, Danny. Very quick.
A very quick one. Go on.
Because of the fact that I personally think that first is out of the window, Forest Green, well done, right?
Yeah.
What would you rather? Would you rather finish comfortably second or have a last day, make it into third?
Oh, if you know you're going to make it, if you offered me knowing that we're going to win, then you've got to go with last game.
Yeah, but you don't know because that's not how it works.
No, but if you can guarantee me that we're going to win it and have that day, I'd rather have that day than comfortably win it. I don't know. Yeah, I suppose so. I think if you knew you were going to win it, then you go for it. But the nerves going into it just become horrendous, don't they?
Surely it's exactly the same as a playoff final.
Yeah, in a way. But then you've got the playoffs to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know that day at Torquay when we went down there and went up all those moons ago?
2000.
I always remember thinking at the end of the day, like, even if we don't make it, so we still got the playoffs just in case.
True.
But yeah, give me that any day. Give me that drama. But then it's Barrow away on the last day, isn't it? So,
it is.
In which I think from what I remember, looking at the pictures on the EFL Quest highlights, there's only a tiny little allocation of away fans.
Yeah, you're only allowed six people. That's official.
I literally have to bring a wheelbarrow.
Yes.
Fill it with as many people as you can and they get in. So that could end up being a scenario. And we're getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we?
We are. Colchester first.
And we've got a Colchester fan coming in now. Si Collinson, how are you, Si?
Really well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming. It's a pleasure. Pleasure to have you on. Just to get a bit of background as to your support in Colchester. Lifelong fan?
Yeah, have been. Yeah. You know, I think it's lifelong fan or punishment, one of the two. But yeah, follow him home and away.
Yeah.
Wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. Without trying to age you, what kind of season was it that you started?
I can't remember, to be fair. I've always followed them and stuff. So only since I've really got married to my wife and actually come back to live in Colchester that I've been able to do it properly, if you like. So it's probably been about like last 5-6 seasons I've been able to do home and away, doing it properly and everything else. But then before that, it was delay road days and things like that, getting to games when I could.
So home and away most weeks are you at the minute?
Yeah, that's it. So, but going back to what you guys were saying earlier about whether you'd rather finish third or second, I've always said I'd rather go up by the playoffs if we can't win it. But it'd be the guarantee knowing you're going to win the playoffs, go through all that pain. But yeah, it's
always playoffs over second or third if you know you're going to do it, isn't it?
That is the thing. It's the knowing you're going to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, and turns us into a good place to start actually. 2019-20, Colchester part of the playoffs in the opposite semi final to us, beaten by Exeter. I think it was extra time, wasn't it? Against Exeter. So you finished, was it in sixth or seventh place that year? Is it sixth?
It was sixth, but it was by default more than anything because it was end up going on games, points per game, didn't it, because of COVID?
Yeah.
So we kind of snuck away there.
Yeah, I think we snuck a lot more as well.
It was frustrating because Exeter have always been a bit of a bogey team for us. So we beat them at our place, then we lost to them, no fans were allowed to go, and I had a lot of faith. If we had got past Exeter, I think we would have won it that year. But that's what everyone says, isn't it?
It's interesting, because I remember that. I remember watching the first leg of your semi-final and just remember thinking that neither side really looked like they were any good, but at the same time going, you know, they'd literally just had a, whatever it was, 3 month break. And so it was the first game back having not done anything else. And I just remember watching it and going, this isn't really that good a game of football to watch. And then I think I'm probably not remembering this right, knowing me, but I think was one of your goals at least from a free kick?
Yeah, the one in. we won the first leg for was the free kick. And I think it was that really strange year because, like you say, we had that break from COVID. There's no fans there. No one really knew what to do or how to do it. And this could sound really bad. And looking back, I'm probably not as convincing as I said it, but I'm quite glad we didn't go up that year because to finally get to the playoffs and potentially win the playoffs and have no fans there would have been quite a harsh way to do it from a fan's point of view, wanting to go and see a team win at Wembley. Kind of thing, but that really was our high point over the last couple of years. It's all been a bit of free fall since then.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I find it really strange how you've gone from being, you know, one of the, you know, playoff contenders, promotion contenders that season, albeit, you know, the fact that the season got cut short, to then being the following season being, I mean, essentially it was down to, or at least from what I remember, down to between you and Southend for going down. I seem to remember there was a derby for you guys quite close to the end of the season. And I think Colchester won it. And that was almost like, well, you've just made sure that you've survived, but Southend go down. How does that happen? Like, what was there like a major restriction on the budget made because of COVID, you know, wanting to make sure that the club survived?
I think there's a little bit of the chairman doing his kind of running the football club more as a business than actually in a football sense that has got a lot of detractors from what he's done. There was from reading between the lines, there was a bit of an upheaval in the background within the squad for different reasons, which caused the knock-on effects. I know Harry Pell was our captain, is now Accrington. And when he left, he came out and said the season just gone, i.e. the season you're talking about, was one of his worst seasons in the dressing room. So I think there was a lot of upheaval, both on and off the pitch, and it just massively hit squad cohesion. Mm. Obviously, we survived by the skin of our teeth, with the Southend derby being the big one, really, like whether we survive or not, and winning that. Obviously, being local rivals to us, it's quite good that they did end up going down. We didn't, because an interesting fact about Southend, due to COVID, their fans saw them in League One. The next time they saw them play live, they're in the National League.
Yeah.
It's nuts, isn't it?
So everyone like sort of random facts like that. And then, yeah, we scraped it. Then this season, we had quite a good summer window, but what looked like a strong squad on paper, and it never clicked. Hayden Mullins wasn't the man for the job at all. Never got on with the fans, never really got the best out of the squad. And now we're having a bit of a mini revival under Wayne Brown. But even then, we're sadly, I think, at times relying on two teams being worse than us, which isn't a good state of affairs, really.
So what did you make of Mullins when he was appointed? Because he didn't have a lot. I think it was Watford, wasn't he? He was at before. Watford under-23's caretaker a little bit. I seem to remember him being a little in caretaker charge every time they decided on a new manager, which was every few months. But what did you kind of make of that appointment originally?
So he came to us originally as assistant manager. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's the most popular person in the building with how his attitude was and how he worked. And then I never took to him at all. One of the biggest reasons I never took to him was because of how he treated the fans. We're very big on, we go after every away game, we go wait for the players, just sort of have a chat, see how the game went, etc. And he just wouldn't acknowledge the away fans. He was always straight down the tunnel after the game, no sort of claps, no anything like that. And although obviously he's got a lot on his plate, it's the press situation, I feel that you've got to acknowledge your fans regardless of what happens. And because of that, he then made it a bit of rod for his own back with the fans that they didn't then give him time when things went against him on the pitch. There was only fallback good blood between the fans and him. If I'm honest, I think we left it a bit too late. He should have gone at Christmas. I think we'd had a bit more breathing space if we could book someone in earlier than what we're trying to do now, firefight to stay up.
Mm-hmm. So Wayne Brown's back now.
Yes.
As interim. He was interim before Mullins, I think. Is that right?
He was, yeah. I know it was a very small amount of games between Seaball going and Mullins being appointed. I think talking to Wayne, he's learned a lot in that small period about how it went wrong for him. Now he's got a second bite of the cherry. I think he's very keen to embrace it and take the lessons learned going forward. He's really connected the fans with the players and to get the fans back on side. I know good results will always do that anyway. So we have had quite a very difficult loss once under him. That was at Mansfield. And even that was a game we were the masters of our own downfall, really, and should have got at least a point. I don't know going forward whether he will be the man for the job come the summer, but I think we should just keep his interim to the end of the season, see where it gets us, and then go from there. Because if you make him permanent now for some reason, whenever an interim manager becomes permanent, it seems to upset the apple cart and the results nosedive. So I'd rather just keep it as it is now than have a look in the summer.
Mm. If you did wait till the summer, is there anybody that you would think as an ideal person for the job?
So I was hoping we were going to, before appointing an interim manager, Brian Brown, we could try and go for Michael Flynn. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's just taken the role at Walsall. Paul Tisdale was with us last season in a bit of an advisory role. Obviously, he ended up at Stevenage. But Michael Flynn's one that I was really sort of hoping would appear, because we're quite bad for it. We always do internal appointments. And that's been one of the gripes of the fans, that we need someone from outside to come in, shake it up a bit and bring new ideas in. So I think it really will be see who's available in the summer. Because managers will leave, teams will swap and change anyway. And I think if you get a manager now, at the current moment is out of work, this time of season, it's normally the managers that hasn't done as well as they could have done or aren't liked by the fan base as much. If are free, a bit like Adams, also getting released by Bradford. I wouldn't want him. So I think we've got to sit tight and see who comes available. But if then Wayne Brown gets his mid-table, give him a transfer window, give him a pre-season to make the squad his own and see how he gets. Give it to him till before the beginning of the season, see how he gets on. And if it's not working by December time, we could always look to change again.
Mm. I guess there's always the issue that you don't want to think about as well, that is Oldham have got a game in hand and there's still 16 games left. If Wayne Brown starts off badly, for example, if it goes downhill and you start to get a little bit jittery, and then you need someone else in, do you think you'd pull the trigger a little bit early just to save yourselves and make sure you're in this league for the next season?
I'd like to think so. Yeah. But then when we beat Orion a couple of weeks ago, 1-0 away, and the performance we put in there, if we can produce that for over say next 10 games out of the 16, we should be safe. We should be able to save ourselves. And the other problem, I think, is if we do start snowballing out of control a little bit and hope has gone, trying to bring a manager in now, I don't know how that will set up for the rest of the season. You almost, God forbid it happened, taking the hit, going down, and then getting a manager who knows the league in to start afresh in the summer instead of trying to get somebody to try and keep us up and then takes us down and doesn't want to stay and you're kind of in a vicious circle. Oldham obviously got their game in hand. They can close the gap between 3 points to us. We've got you guys on Saturday. We've got a run of 4 home games, including 2 that were postponed for COVID coming up. Now they're going to be the sort of season defining games for us, really. If we can get out those 4, if we can get at least 9 points, I feel a lot happier. But we've got to try and beat the teams around us. We drew Carlisle when we should have beat them. And I think it's the problem. We're not getting points against teams we should be. The teams we shouldn't be getting points against, we are. So it's a bit of a typical culture thing. Teams that are better than us, we do well against. Teams that are around us, we struggle with.
So it talks about your home. You've got 4 home games coming up after this one. What kind of atmosphere do you get? Because I've not been there yet to your new ground. I just remembered Layer Road being completely weirdly intimidating because of its closeness to the pitch and everything like that. And the fans were just all packed in. what's the comparison in your new stadium in terms of home atmosphere? Can you build something quite well?
Not really. It's a 10,000 seater stand. We only get per average about 2.5 if we're lucky, including away fans. So the atmosphere isn't anything like sort of Fortress Lay Road was. And because it's the new ground, how it's built is quite big and airy, so it doesn't form as much. It is one of those cliche things with football. When we're doing well, the crowd behind it is quite good. It can be quite a bit of noise, get going. But recently, the last couple of seasons, it's been quite dead purely because people go with a hope rather than expectation at times. And as soon as we go a goal down or something doesn't quite go right, the crowd do turn a little bit sort of partisan on the players and the management. And it has for a bad experience. Also, where it is in the middle of nowhere, there's nothing really around it. So it's hard to get much of a match day experience other than what's at the ground. And because Robbie Cowley hasn't really opened much up post-COVID, there's not really much of a match day experience there either, sadly. So it's a shame, especially when you see fans come from, like the Carlisle fans come down or something like that. You're like, all this distance I've travelled, we've got nothing to sort of offer them as a pre-game experience. Because I remember when you go to your place, it's all you've got, you've got the little pub in the ground and stuff like that, but you've also got the industrial state out there with Frankie and Benny's and things like that you can go to have a few beers and sort of make a day of it. Well, we don't have that.
Yeah. I think that's the first time I've heard that from an away fan, actually. make a day of it at Sixfields.
It's a bit of an odd one, isn't it, that one? Yeah. I think, from our perspective, that's a bit weird. But yeah.
We played you a couple of, I think it was the COVID season, that I took my mother-in-law to Stansted Airport for an 8 o'clock flight. So we were like, I won't go home, I'll just carry on to the ground. We were at your place at 10 o'clock for a 3 o'clock kickoff.
Oh, wow.
So it was literally like, okay, we're going to sit in Frankie Benny's. They're not even serving alcohol yet. Right, we'll just have some breakfast. And yeah, luckily, to be fair, the stewards were really good because you've got that home bar, haven't you? It's on your main stand.
Yeah.
They don't. You said no away fans allowed. But we were like, look, we're really sorry. We'll just keep quiet in the corner. We haven't got any sort of culture stuff on. Do you mind coming? They were really good. They let us in, you know, really accommodating. So. Kudos to the guy who's on the gate there. He sorted us out.
I think, to be fair, yeah. I mean, it depends who we're playing. I find that who gets allowed into Cars Bar. There are some games where there's no away fans. You're not allowed. But then there's others where quite happily they'll let people in. I didn't really think that Colchester would be necessarily one of the clubs that we wouldn't let in. Because it's not like... I mean, okay, fine. We both get mentioned on Look East, but there's still quite a bit of a difference. There's still quite a mileage difference between the two, isn't there? It's not like it's just round the corner.
I think it's there is rivalries. There is this in. But I think the lower down the pyramid we are, especially being League Two, I think there's a lot more mutual respect between fan bases than maybe you find a bit higher up the pyramids. And yeah, there is obviously the bands. You do get some idiots. Every club's got a few idiots that want to cause trouble. But a lot of the time, it's very much good natured, and the banter and everyone gets on a lot better down here.
Yeah,
unless you go to Southend, there's a weird bunch of people.
Get that in there. That's it. Yeah, so get the dig in.
Do that.
Speaking of, speaking of idiots, this is maybe completely unfair. However, a few months ago. Or maybe not even months, a few weeks back, there was a video circulated on social media where a Colchester fan basically confronted your chairman, Robbie Cowling. And Robbie was quoted as saying, this is my club, not yours. And that was the clip that went around on social media. What did you make of that?
So the problem with it is because obviously it's only a very short clip of what's going on. And Robbie's always been quite renowned of the fan base. He's very Marmite. People either love him or hate him.
Right.
He treats the club as a business. So, like, during COVID and things like that, he's very much a case of, right, I'm not going to spend big. I don't mind if we struggle on the pitch, but I want the Colchester United to survive as a business, as a club. And obviously, that didn't endear him to certain aspects of the fan base. We're like, well, hang on, if you would just put a bit more money into the club, we pretend to get better players, we can get out of this division. And at times, he does come across to some of the fan base that he doesn't want us to promote. He's quite happy where we are. And throughout the game, that the clip was taken, he was getting a lot of abuse, songs being sung about him and stuff like that from the crowd and from certain sections of the following.
Mm.
And then as he's coming out, he's getting a lot of uncalled for abuse. And that was his response. Now, technically, he's right in what he says. It is his club. No, he owns it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the understanding you're a custodian of the club and the fan base is what makes the club what it is. So it's our money that goes into paying for tickets. And even if he thinks that, it's not something to come out and say. It just gives mm-hmm. people more ammunition to basically hold against you.
Yeah, yeah.
My take, I think what he should do, he should spend what some clubs do, you know, have like fan forums where you get a complete mm-hmm. cross-section of fan base, go and have a chat with him. You air your problems. It's all minutes and documented. It gets sent out. Everyone sees what's been said. Try to open a bit more of a dialogue with the fans.
Yeah.
Because he does seem to sort of sit in his ivory tower, sort of laughing down at us all at times. Right. That's where the divide's happening. You know, without him, we wouldn't have a club. And I don't think people are really queuing up in the Middle East to suddenly come over to Colchester and buy us out.
You never know, though.
No, you know, it's like everyone thinks their club's the most important, most valuable thing in the world.
Yeah.
But the reality of it, considering how some owners have been, Berries, for example, assets dripping them to death, what Swindon had to put up with and things like that, you're like, is it best of the devil we know or is it not? I don't really know.
It's that interesting thing, isn't it, Danny? Because a lot of what Si has just said there, we've heard, you know, about the Cobblers, haven't we, in, well, recent times and before that. The whole thing of fans essentially will always say, well, if you just paid a bit more money or put your hand in your pocket a bit more, then we could sign better players and we could get out of this division and X, Y, and Z. And I mean, it's very easy for us to sit there, isn't it, and to say that because it's not our money. Yeah. And for me to just, like, it's me basically turning around to you, Danny, and going, well, mate, I tell you what, if you just put your hand in your pocket, then I could get a yacht. I wouldn't be turning around and asking for, you know, Patreon supporters to cover the costs of running the podcast. Like, you know, if you just put your hand in your pocket, Danny, then we'd be able to do this.
Get
a yacht. Yeah, it'd be lovely. But I mean, that's easy for me to say because it's not my money and it's not me that's having to do it. Whereas, and football fans at all clubs will do that and will say that. And there's never really going to be an answer to that, I don't think.
I think it's because of Football Manager. I know this sounds really stupid, but because we can't buy a Football Manager and take Colchester to win the Champions League.
Mm.
So hang on. Obviously, it's completely different to being a football manager and simulator in real life, but people see it as, well, it can't be that hard. Just cough up your 200 million and get Mbappe's come to Colchester, we're going to win the league. How difficult is it?
Just go to the in-game editor, give yourself 3 million.
Yeah. Why not? But I completely agree with what you guys are saying there. It is that to fans and anyone connected to clubs, it seems so easy to how to solve it, how to do this. And even to come down to like in-game stuff, when you're like, well, if he puts that player there, change that player over there, puts that one there, then the next fan next year will say something completely different. So I'll say something completely different. I think it's from, you know, playing football, managing myself, you see it. Football's so easy that we complicate and there's always more to it than we read between the lines. All we see is the 90 minutes of the pitch, not what's happening in training, who's doing what behind the scenes and things like that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you see as being the next level for you? Do you kind of naturally think you should fit as a League One side eventually? Does that feel like where you should be as a club, or are you kind of happy to kind of flip between the two and give it a go every now and then?
In my heart, I'd love to say, you know, we were a safe mid-table League One team. But are we the day and age? I don't know. Because look at the clubs that are in there. You've got European Cup winners in that league now. Sunderland's struggling to get out of it. Ipswich are in there. There's ex-Prem teams sort of struggling in and around there. And also, if we could finish strongly in League Two every season, winning games, enjoying our football, would that be more fun than maybe going up to League One and getting beat every week? And
probably from our experience last year.
Yeah, from our experience, definitely.
But I think the other problem is within the last decade, we've been up in the Championship.
Yeah.
And that's the other reason. Yeah. Obviously, Robbie Cowling took over when we were in the Championship. And now we're pretty much propping up the football pyramid.
Mm.
So that also goes against what people think about Robbie. It's like, hang on, you've taken us from the Championship down to the bottom of League Two. I think realistically, sort of bottom third of League One is probably our true representation of where we should be with the squad and the facilities and everything we do have, looking to then build from that. Not where we are now is completely wrong. And every team that goes down, most fans will say it, but if we do go down this season, I generally think we're too good to go down. Not that that's true, because if you go down, you deserve to go down.
Mm.
But with what we've got on paper and who we've got and how we know we can play at certain times of the season, it'll be a bitter blow if we do relegate.
Yeah, I will say that I don't necessarily agree you're too good to go down, but I know what you mean. Like, I look at Colchester as a club that they do feel like they're too big to go out of the Football League. As you say, Championship not that long ago. You're a club that has always been around in the same leagues as Northampton, not necessarily always in the same league together, but, there's usually only maybe one league between us. And so I kind of see it that you would feel like that we shouldn't be going down. And it's exactly how I would feel about Northampton, obviously. But having said that, there'll be clubs like Southend who will have said exactly the same thing and look at where they are now. And, the fact is that no club is too big to go down. The fact that, as you said, you've got, former Premier League clubs playing in League One, that just goes to show that if you don't get it right, you don't have a divine right to be playing where you believe you should be. Because otherwise, otherwise, there'd be 72 teams in the Premier League.
Also, as well, we look at National League now. How, again, going like 10 years ago, it's pretty much the two football league clubs that went down, at least one would bounce straight back up again. But even now, you go down there, you're going to potentially be looking at good 3, 4, 5, 6 years before you're out of that again, if you ever come back. So I think there's a lot more pressure now on teams not to go down.
Yeah.
Because the bounce back ability isn't as there, because a lot more people are investing in non-league, likes of Wrexham, and obviously Salford did it because there's no financial fair play down there. Do you end up struggling down there?
Yeah.
So it is. That's, I think, more the worry if we were to go down is how would we come back up?
Yeah.
But it's more like how, not when, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
So coming on to current players, current squad. Having a look through. Charles, I know you want to take this first one because you went to school with them, as you so regularly tell us.
All the time.
Luke Chambers, obviously started his career with us, gone on to bigger and better things, and back in League Two now with yourselves. How are you finding it?
Oh, brilliant. I'm a shirt sponsor for this year.
Nice.
I love Luke Chambers, both on and off the pitch. I think his professionalism's there. On the pitch, he leaves his heart and soul to it all. And off the pitch, he's always good for a chat, a bit of a laugh, wears his heart on the sleeve. He's really, really done well with his captain's side. And although he's coming for a lot of criticism at the beginning of the season, that was more from where he came from. So Colchester fans seem to think we're at Switch's retirement home at the moment.
It's not just point, Colchester fans.
But if you look at... now, Nuble's gone to Leyton Orient on loan. But before he went, we could field a whole starting 11 of Ipswich players. Some of them came to us via other clubs, and some of them had only played a few games for Ipswich, but others obviously were big players for them, likes of Chambers, obviously captained them at some point as well. So I think they did come in for a lot of criticism on that front as well. Here we go, another ex-Ipswich come down here, just stealing a wage. But out of all of them, Chambers has played really well, but I think the one that surprised a lot of people, and he's very much a player you don't know what you've got until he's not there, is Kyle Skous. I think he's been one of our standout players this year. He does everything well, all the basics well. And the last couple of games, he has got off injured or he's not been available. You really notice that he's not there controlling the midfield. He's a quiet, laid back character who doesn't do any of the fancy, what you see, like the fancy footwork or anything like that. But he just does his job so well and so impressively that it's almost like having two players on the pitch when he's there.
And Alan Judge was another one, wasn't he? He came from Ipswich.
Yes.
He was the one who squared up to the referee when we played Ipswich last season.
Yeah, so he came in quite a bit of a fanfare in this and that, and he's with his set pieces and stuff. I don't think he's hit the ground running as much as we thought he's going to, because he was probably one of the biggest impressed with Alan Judge. You know, his set piece alone are worth at least 5-6 goals a season. He hasn't really delivered. Freddie Sears has hit the ground running again. Now he's stopped playing out wide, playing in through the middle, is against the goals. But although he's ex-Ipswich, because he went from us to Ipswich, they're back again. He's kind of still got that Colchester connection. Tommy Smith's another one that came down the road from there, who, you know, he's club captain. He's a bit hit and miss at times. There's always a mistake seems to be boiling in there with him. Who else is of interest? We just signed Tom Dallison in the window from Crawley. He's been quite impressive. I don't know how he couldn't get into the Crawley side. So it's quite a good little one for us. And even just like rattling those names off, you know, there's players that people outside of League Two have heard of. Internationals there. Alan Judge plays for Republic. Tommy Smith still plays New Zealand. So there's quite a lot. There's players there that should have it and do have it. It's just getting it to gel. It's getting that something's got to click. And like, I think, unfortunately for you guys, we'll click a lot more on Saturday, because going back to what I said, you're one of the better teams in the league because you're performing well and you're doing well. We tend to up our game against teams like you guys.
Yeah. I'm hoping not, but I hope we can give a full sense of security about that. But other one I wanted to mention is Emir Hughes, because I think you've just signed him on loan, is it? Oh, no, signed him permanently, sorry, again from Ipswich. We had him when he was really young for Man City. I think he played about 10 games for us. I was surprised that he's still only 28. But he always seems to have that little bit of quality about him. So surprised to see him drop down to League 2 a little bit.
I think, so although we got it from Ipswich, technically he was unattached, because his problem is his injury. He always seems to be injured, picking up knocks, picking up this. And I think he's kind of come down to League 2 and just hope that he can sort of, we'll say rekindle his career, because like I say, he's only 28, he's still got a few years left. I think he just needs to drop down to get a good run of games, a good level of fitness. Because what we end up doing is, if he's played 4 games, he's just missed 2 for injury. He should be back probably this weekend. But he's a good player, but we haven't got the sort of time and space to be able to carry injured players at the moment, because we are desperate for points. He has had a lot of glimpses of the player, you know, everyone thinks he should be. But you always worry if he stretches that a little bit too much, or if he runs that a little bit too far, is something going to pop? Is something going to go? And he always seems to have that injury risk over him. I think that's the only thing that's keeping him down, is the fact that clubs maybe don't take a punt on him as they could do in order to run the risk. He definitely got the glimmers, though. What we've seen, he scored one of our late equalisers. When we went down to 9 men, he scored.
That's a 9-man game, yeah.
He scored the equaliser on that game. So what we seem to be lacking at the moment is we've got a lot of players that could produce 8, 9 out of 10 games, but we're not consistent enough to be able to do 7 out of 10 games. That makes sense? They play really well or they vanish. That's where we need to sort of balance the books. Because that's where Skous gives you a 7 out of 10 every game, regardless of what's going on. However, everyone else is playing, you can guarantee he will play well.
Mm-hmm.
You watch another shocking game. Saturday,
it sounds like you could be a Jekyll or Hyde turn up on Saturday.
Yeah.
Last question before predictions, which I'm going to ask every week now because it's probably our only source of goals. How are you at defending set pieces?
Better is the honest answer. We used to begin the season, it was pointless to actually defend them because they were pretty much guaranteed to go in. But somehow, I think Wayne Brown, because he's an ex-defender himself, has tightened the reins on that a little bit. So we're not only we managing to keep goals out, we're also starting to score goals from them, which is a very, very unconscious thing to be doing. So, yeah, if you'd have played us in September, October time, I'd be like, oh God, don't even mention set pieces. But now it's a bit, little bit different, so we're not too bad at them at the moment.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember when we played you, where the goals came from, but I'm assuming they... So it was it 2-1, or was that different?
We always win 2-1 at Colchester, don't we, Danny? That is usually the scoreline.
That's the go-to scoreline, sir.
Yeah,
when did we play you at home?
I think it was early on. It always seems to be in August for some reason.
Yeah, it was the 14th of August. It was our first home game of the year.
Yeah, yeah. It always seems to fall like that for some reason, the Colchester's. Was it 1-0, actually, it looks like, last year. Guthrie scored. So it must have been a set piece, I'm imagining. But yeah, anyway, on to predictions. Charles, you're not having a good week with predictions.
I'm not. Should we have a jingle first? Because they're so good.
Yes. Yeah. We should have a jingle for our predictions. Have we got a new one?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
We do.
Let's go for it.
I predict a riot. I predict a riot. Or a ball draw.
There you go. That's Dan Darwood. Thank you, Dan.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan. Amazing. Speaking of, do you predict a riot, Charles, at the weekend? 2 o'clock kickoff.
2 o'clock kickoff.
Anything? Do you think? Yeah.
No.
Are we going to take time to wake up? Do you think?
I think it's going to be a difficult one, personally. As much as I think we've done quite well against Colchester in the past, away from home, I think at Sixfields it's a different matter. However, the only frame of reference I've got with that is that the last time I think we played Colchester at home that I was definitely at the game for was a certain striker's debut. Do you remember, Danny?
A certain striker's debut.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is it Clive Platt?
No. Way, way more close to now than that. Big name.
Big name. Bayark and Fenwa.
That failed. No, that failed at the Colchester.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down, Joss.
Marvin Sordell.
Marvin Sordell, yes.
I think it was his debut.
Yeah.
And he came on, and I seem to remember he missed a cracking chance that was a one-on-one where he basically just the ball got tangled in his legs. So that's my only frame of reference for saying that we don't tend to play very well against Colchester at home.
No, we lost 4-0 about 2 or 3 years ago, I think, at home.
Yeah.
That was
the last time we played you, I think, at your place.
There you go. You see, that's probably Marvin Sordell's debut.
2nd of February 2019.
Sounds about right. Going. Yeah.
The following season, we wouldn't have played because it would have been one of the COVID ones, wouldn't it?
We would have been in League One. Yeah.
Then you lost at the home. We beat you at home that season 1-0. Then you beat us at home this season 1-0.
See, I mean, just more evidence that I don't know what I'm talking about. Thank you, boys. I will go for a 1-0 Cobblers win because that is what we seem to do at the moment. And yes, it will be Fraser Horsall with the goal.
Mm. Good. Got sent off, I think, in the early game against the Colchester.
Shocking. He'll be shocking. Ripe for payback then.
He will be. He will be. Si, what are you going with for this one?
I think Colchester going to win 2-1.
Bold, I like
with it. With Sears to grab the winning goal. Now, just to give, I'm really sad, I've looked it up online while chatting to you guys. So, Northampton versus Colchester, you guys have won 34 games. There's been 14 draws, and you've lost 30. So, it's quite evenly matched, the win-lose columns.
Okay.
I like that you've come on and predicted a win. And a lot of football fans, whenever you ask them for a prediction, I always go, especially, I'm always pessimistic. So, I quite like that. Speaking of which.
Danny, what's your prediction?
Bad feeling this is going to be, you know, one of them rainy, windy type days when nothing happens and it's like, and it's a nil-nil.
Oh.
So that's to entice everyone to go.
There you go.
I think we're going to...
2 o'clock kickoff, everyone.
2 o'clock kickoff, everyone. Sure you're there. Maybe don't turn up till three. but no, it'll be good. It should be a good game. Thank you, Si. Where can we find you on social media?
It's all on Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah. What, how have you contacted me earlier? I could have my Twitter account. Just sort of pop. Things just pop up around. Like, oh, do you want to chat football? Certainly. I'll always chat football.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's one of the things I know, sort of in a random curveball, is I like about League One, League Two, that there's always groups of fans that want to chat.
Mm-hmm.
And you always be able to have good conversation, and you know, whether you agree or not, everyone's quite respectful about how you chat. The higher up the pyramid you get seen, you know, Arsenal TV and all that sort of like, what's going on? So,
no one wants that.
That's why I like it down this part of the world. It's much, much nicer for this part of the pyramid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Thank you so much, Si, for coming on. All the best. So, are you going up on Saturday? Across? Yeah. Sorry, up, down?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm not getting there at 10 o'clock this time.
No. Well, at least it'll be an hour earlier kickoff if you do.
That is true. I won't have, won't have a dog to wait. Yeah, no, yeah. I'll be there. Fingers crossed it's a good game. It's not just pouring down with rain, windy, and we will just freeze to death.
Nice one. Thanks so much, Si. Thank you, Charles. Problem.
Thank you, Danny.
We'll be back next week with a Rochdale fan.
Oh, Rochdale.
Yes.
Oh, good.
So next week. So, yeah, we'll see you then. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Support the podcast on Patreon by joining the It's All Cobblers to Me fan club. Every month, you'll receive access to exclusive bonus content, such as our Meet the Staff series, hear our player interviews before anyone else, and be invited to regular meetups. By joining the fan club, you'll be helping us to continue our sponsorship of NTFC women's player Abby Bruin and enable us to keep the podcast and all our other content going to the high standards you expect. To join the fan club, go to patreon.com/cobblers2me.
Sports Social Podcast Network.